Happy Sabbath to everyone. Good to see all of you. Hopefully you are doing well, had a good week, and good to see all of you here on the Sabbath day. And we are glad to have a few number of guests with us. We're thankful that you could join us, and good to see all of you. And hopefully you're staying well. You wouldn't be here otherwise, but good to see you, and thank you for joining us. So we want to take a look at issues relating to the Holy Days and the Passover coming up. So we're going to, I thought about how would I best do this. So I thought, well, this will be awfully long if it's all in one, and then we have Bible study. So I thought, well, the best way to do this would be divide it up into two split sermons. So that's how we're going to do it. So we'll have a split sermon, and then we will have a break and special music, and then we'll have the second split sermon. So there, when service is in, there will be no Bible study. So I know you're all chomping at the bit to do that, but we'll just end a little bit earlier today. And I thought that was the best way to cover what I'm going to cover. So today we're going to look at, first of all, the Old Testament Passover. And of course, you know, we've been in the church, but sometimes you come across different people's opinions and ideas, and there is some controversy about the observance of the Passover. Exactly what does it represent? When do we do it? How do we do it? All of those kinds of things, sadly, are controversies. So what we want to do today is look at what the meaning of the Passover is from an Old Testament perspective, first of all. And as I said, it has different meanings to different communities. For instance, the Passover for the Jewish community represents God freeing them from bondage. Now, that's not what we believe about the Passover, but that's what the Jewish community understands about it. Also, you have many Christian commentators who see that the same way, that Passover has to do with freeing Israel from Egypt and being out of bondage. But this is, as I said, that's not the meaning of the Passover, and it's good, it's important to understand what it does mean, which it does not mean being freed from bondage. So we're going to look at the timing of Passover and seek to understand exactly what it does mean. So as members of God's church, we understand that over 3,400 years ago, God passed over Israel. Now, many times when God passes you over, it's because you're not getting a promotion or you're losing out in some way. But in this case, Passover is an awfully good thing for all of us. And so it's a good thing to understand exactly what it means. We as members of the church understand the story. We understand Pharaoh's part in that and how his heart was hardened. And with the 10th plague, God dealt the final blow and paved the way for Israel to be able to leave the land of Egypt. So God worked all of this out in his magnificent ability to work things out as he does. And so what we want to look at here is Passover and understand it more fully, the New Testament Passover. So Passover is probably the most widely recognized of the biblical festivals. A lot of people, you know, we know about it. Most people know about it, and we have come to understand it as well. Most people recognize the name Passover, but they don't understand the sequence of events. How did all of this unfold exactly? And how it unfolds, what does it tell us about the Passover? So my goal this afternoon is to answer two questions. Two questions. One, do we fully appreciate the significance and sequence of the events that surrounded the Old Testament Passover? Because even though we live in the New Testament times, it's still a significant event that teaches us much about what God is trying to accomplish in his plan of salvation. The second part of the split sermon will be to understand how the Old Testament events relate to the New Testament Passover, which they do. They correlate beautifully. So that will be the second split sermon. So a question we might ask is, why should we understand the significance and sequence of events of both the Old Testament and New Testament Passover? My hope is that when I'm done, you'll know. You'll know, and you'll be armed and ready to answer anybody that questions why we do what we do. So let's begin in Exodus chapter 11. Let's begin in Exodus chapter 11. So we're in Exodus chapter 11. It lays out the 10th plague, and we'll begin with the 10th plague. It's not that the others weren't important. Each of the plagues were important in God accomplishing his purpose. But we can start with number 10 in mind and focus on that and move on to what unfolds. Let's begin in Exodus chapter 11, verse 1. Exodus chapter 11, verse 1. It says, "And the Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt, and afterward he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether." So Israel had tried to leave Egypt. They had tried to work with Pharaoh to leave on a positive note, but Pharaoh would not relent. So eventually Pharaoh was going to let them go. But it was going to be under the duress of the 10th plague. So Pharaoh would not just say, you can go ahead and leave. He was actually going to drive them out. Exodus chapter 11, verse 4. It says, "Then Moses said, Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn of the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again." So God's punishment was to be inflicted on all of the firstborn who did not have the blood of the lamb on their lintels, on their doorposts, and on their lintels. So God was going to go through the land, and God was going to see who had that blood on their doorposts and lintels. And if the blood was there, he would pass over. And that was symbolic in their time of what eventually was to work out through Jesus Christ. So there, God is going to kill all of the firstborn of animals and of the highborn and the lowborn. Didn't matter. Everybody would be impacted. So we come to Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, and we have specific instructions for the Passover. Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. It says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." And we know that as we look at the holy days and what God was instructing Israel, that there was a different calendar that God established and that God gave to the Hebrew people. And it's very different from our calendar. You know, for instance, we go by the Gregorian calendar, and it says that Passover is on March 26th. However, a few days before that was the first of Nisan or Abib, and the 10th was the day they selected the lamb, and the lamb was actually sacrificed on the 10th, which is the evening where we observe Passover. So there's a difference between the calendars, and we've all come to understand that. We did not understand it, before we came in the church. I didn't know anything about a Hebrew calendar, and you probably didn't either. Let's look at Exodus chapter 12, verse 3. Exodus 12, verse 3. "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, On the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish." You know, and as you look at these things, they all tie in to what ultimately played out in the New Testament. It's to be a lamb without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. So you had choices. You had to select it on the 10th, and then you had to sacrifice it on the 14th. Exodus 12, verse 6, it says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. And that's the time between sundown and complete darkness. And it runs about a half hour, as we'll talk about here in a little bit. But anyway, they were to all sacrifice that lamb at that time. It was to be something that they all did together. Exodus chapter 12, verse 7. Exodus chapter 12, verse 7. It says, "And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with leavened bread, with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head with its legs and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. And thus you shall eat it, with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." So God is laying these things out about what they're to do, how they're to do it, and they're to carry out all of these actions, and they're all foreshadowing what is ultimately to come as Christ comes and fulfills these things. Verse 12. It says, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." I will execute this, and I'm going to do this as a judgment upon Egypt. Verse 13, "Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So this day shall be a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance." So God gave many details of what was to take place as the Passover came. There were important lessons that Israel was to learn and that we are still to learn and take to heart in our time. So why all the detail? Well, God gives all of this detail in order to help us to rightly understand what took place. What did take place back then? When you do things like described in the Passover, time goes by. So He says, do these things, but why did he have them? And as they were doing them, it took time to carry all of these things out. And it's important to understand that, because when you look at people's understanding of the Passover, it impacts exactly when we do it and why we do it. And because we understand those things, it allows us to rightly apply what God describes to be done. When you look at the details of doing certain tasks at certain times, time would be required to carry out that task, as we will see. So when you were to kill the lamb, and you're to drain the blood, and then you're to take some of that blood and put it on the lintels, that will take a certain amount of time. And then you're to roast it with fire. Again, that's going to take time. Every step that God laid out is going to take time, and you have to take that into account in order to rightly understand when things took place, and it's important to understand. One of the lessons you learn from the Old Testament Passover and the plagues leading up to it is that each of the plagues that God poured out on Egypt was an attack or a judgment on the gods of Egypt. And we've talked about that in the past. We did a Bible study one day about that, so it's back in the archive someplace. So at the end of the day, God had established himself in the eyes of the Egyptians as the sovereign God over all the gods of Egypt. And Egypt had lots of gods. And they thought that their gods were superior to all gods, and that their understanding was complete. And God said, "Sorry, I don't think you guys fully understand who and what God is. But after we go through this process, you will understand better that maybe these gods that you have great confidence in, like the Nile River and all of that, aren't quite the gods you thought that they were. So God exercised his might and he exercised his power over these supposed gods. And we see here that the Passover was established for perpetuity. It is a something that you're going to do next year and the year after and 1,000 years down the road. And we're 3,400 years down and we're still doing it. Because God said, this is a memorial I want you to keep forever. We will still be doing it in God's kingdom. When Christ returns, we will still be doing it. Because even though we're spirit beings and we understand what God is accomplishing, the world doesn't. And they need to understand what God is accomplishing and come under the blood of the Lamb. So we're blessed in that way. And it's important to understand how this all played out and understand what day it took place on. And we continue to do that. Let's go look at it. Let's look at the idea of the 14th of the month when the lamb was sacrificed. What do the scriptures tell us about the 14th of the month? Does it matter? Could we pick any day? Well, I'm going to remember Christ's sacrifice on this particular day. Well, think about, you don't have to look at these scriptures, but you might look at them later. I will mention the verse or verses and just mention what each of these verses say. So if you look at Exodus chapter 12, verse 3, it tells us to select the lamb or goat on the 10th day of the month. So the timing was important. And actually, as you go to the New Testament, you see that the lamb, in essence, Christ, was selected on that very day, as you look at the chronology of things. Exodus chapter 12, verse 6, it says, keep the Passover lamb until the 14th day of the same month. So God's emphasizing the day on which the lamb is to be sacrificed, is to be kept till the 14th. Leviticus 23, verse 5, it says, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight. Again, the 14th. Numbers 9, verse 3. On the 14th day of this month at twilight. Numbers 9, verse 5. And they kept the Passover on the 14th. Numbers 28, verses 16 and 17. On the 14th day of the first month is Passover. So you've already got, you're going through Israel's journey, and the 14th continues to be emphasized. Now let's go forward in time to Joshua chapter 5, verse 10. Joshua chapter 5, verse 10. So 40 years have passed, and Israel has entered into the land of promise. What does God say at this point? Does he say, well, you're in the land of promise, I've accomplished that, we're not going to do this anymore? He doesn't do that. Joshua 5, verse 10. It says, we have moved forward. Okay, so anyway, he says, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month. So again, they're still keeping it on the 14th. Then we come forward many years to the time of the kings in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verse 15. In 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verse 15, it says, the Passover lambs, speaks of the Passover lambs on the 14th day. So you're down to the time of the kings. So you're, several hundred years have passed, and God is still doing this. Now we come forward in time to the time of Ezra. Ezra is around about 1,000 years have passed since the people of Israel began keeping the Passover. And in Ezra's time, in chapter 6, verse 19, it says they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. Now let's go forward in time to Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 45, verse 21, it says, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, you shall observe Passover. So God keeps this 14th day in mind all the way through history, all the way into the time when Christ returns, because it's a fundamentally important day to our salvation. And it's important to all of us, and it's important to the whole world once they come to understand it. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23 once again. Leviticus chapter 23. So as you look at what we're, the verses we're going to examine here in Leviticus 23, what they do is they delineate between the 14th and the 15th, which is important for us to understand. What takes place on the 14th is the sacrifice of the lamb or the sacrifice of Christ. And on the 15th is about Israel coming out of Egypt. Two different events, two different days. And so it's important for us to understand that. So Leviticus chapter 23, verse 5 talks about on the 14th day of the first month at twilight, the lambs or the goats are to be offered. And we'll talk a little bit more in the future shortly here about the twilight. We see here specifically that the Passover is on the 14th day of the first month at twilight. And as it says there, it is the Lord's Passover. It's not Israel's Passover. It's not Judah's Passover. It's not my Passover, the Christian Passover. It's the Lord's Passover. It's something we need to keep in mind that this is God's and it's very important to him. So now we see the 15th, which is mentioned in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 6. It says, on the 15th day of the same month is the first of unleavened bread to the Lord. That's when the period of time we observe as the days of unleavened bread occurs. And it begins on the 15th of the month. The 14th is the Passover, and the 15th is a completely different observance. It says, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation, and on the seventh day you shall have a holy convocation, and as you shall do no customary work. So these verses become important because the primary debate that goes on is that the Passover is on the 15th. At the end of the 14th, going into the 15th. So it's on the 14th at the end of the day. And the question is, well, which is it? The beginning of the day or the end of the day? That is a controversy that we want to understand. Because as we look at the evidence, then we'll see, I think it's at the beginning of the day. But we'll go through the evidence first and see if that's the conclusion we come to. So you beginning of the day, end of the day on the 14th, which is it? So from the Jewish perspective, end of the day, going into the 15th. From our perspective, it's at the beginning of the day. But why would we conclude that? So we see here from the Bible that the 14th is the Passover, and the 15th is the first day of unleavened bread. So the question we're going to address is what happened in the Old Testament? And we can find evidence of what happened in the Old Testament, and that helps us to be able to conclude properly when we would observe Passover. So one question is, when did they actually leave Egypt? And that's important to understand, and we'll understand that. To do all of that, we have to look at the sequence of events and ask ourselves some questions. What occurred, and what did that what is practically possible that would allow that to happen? So, you know, you can try to put a lot of information, a lot of activity into a short period of time in order to get a certain outcome. But the question is, could you actually do that in that amount of time? So there are events that took place that bring that into question. So we want to connect all the dots and we'll look at the New Testament in the second split. And we know from the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 11 that we are to observe the Passover on the same night that Jesus Christ did. And as God worked all of this out, do you think that he would have worked this out as he worked it out with the death of the actual Passover? Makes sense to me, and you'll see that it lines up beautifully. So we'll go through this and connect the dots. So we read in Leviticus that the Passover is specifically on the 14th, and the first day of unleavened bread is on the 15th. So let's start with the events, the sequence of events that took place beginning on the 14th. So it tells us that we're to keep the Passover on the 14th day of the month. And it tells them that God told Moses and Israel, you are to sacrifice the Passover at the beginning of the 14th. You're to sacrifice the lamb on the 14th. So, and it says it's to be done between the two evenings. So, again, where do we calculate the two evenings, at the beginning or at the end? And most scholars have looked at the wording there, twilight, or between the two evenings, and have felt that it better correlates with the beginning. So what they were instructed to do was to kill the Passover lamb in this period between sunset and dark. So if they sacrificed the lamb during that period, could they carry out all of the things that God gave them to do between the time they sacrificed the lamb and they put the blood on the lintel and the doorpost, and they roasted the lamb and they ate the lamb? Could they do all of that and the other things that God asked them to do and still leave that night? Let's see what we're told. So Exodus chapter 12, verse 21, it says, then Moses called all of the elders and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourselves, which we've talked about. Put some of that on the doors. And this is to be, it says that this is to be an ongoing ordinance, as it says in verse 24. It says, and you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. It will come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service. And it shall be that when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? So what is he expecting us to do? We're to observe it. Our children are to see it, and we're to pass this knowledge along to them. This is what we do. This is why we do it. And help them to understand it so they will continue to do it. It says in verse 26 of Exodus 12, and it shall be that when your children say to you, why are you doing this? Then you shall tell them, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So that would seem to indicate that maybe we should make sure our children understand the origin of this particular ordinance, this particular memorial. Look at its ancient roots, and they should understand it. Why are we doing this? And help them to understand it and understand that it wasn't just an Old Testament ceremony or memorial. It's also something that goes together with the New Testament and the memorial that God established then. It says at the end of the verse 27, so the people bowed their heads and worshiped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. So they've done all of this between the two evenings. They've sacrificed the lamb. They've roasted the lamb. They've eaten the lamb. So they're going through eating, and then they put the blood on the lintels. So God knows who his people are, those people who have listened and followed the instruction. So God comes through the land and he strikes the firstborn. So did Israel know that God had stricken the firstborn? Did they have any understanding of that? Did they know what was happening around them? It's interesting. Look at Exodus chapter 12, verse 30. Exodus 12, verse 30. So the Lord struck the firstborn. What's the reaction? It says, so Pharaoh rose in the night. He, all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. So you have fathers, mothers, daughters, sons, from the highborn to the lowborn, and you have their livestock dying, firstborn of the livestock die. So there's death throughout the land. Everybody is experiencing this. my uncle, my cousin, my friend, these people are dead, and they're at home, it's dark, and they're realizing that death has taken place in their home. And people are crying out. And so the people of Israel, I'm sure, heard the crying and the wailing of the Egyptians that lived close to them. So this was a cataclysmic event. It's thought that possibly close to 1 million people died in this particular situation. So the Egyptians were just beginning to realize what was happening after midnight, recognizing that someone that they knew and loved was dead in their house. And so this all took place probably between midnight and about 2 a.m. in the morning. They're finally beginning to realize the magnitude of what has taken place here. And the one who knows this better than anyone else is the Pharaoh, because his son, who is a firstborn, died. So this was something that took place throughout all Egypt. So Exodus chapter 12, verse 31. So all this death is taking place. It's impacted Pharaoh. And what does Pharaoh do? Exodus 12, verse 31. It says, then he, that is Pharaoh, called for Moses and Aaron by night. And the hour of night at which this took place is not laid out for us, but it had to be somewhere between midnight and morning. And he told his servants, rise and go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you said. Also take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone. And bless me also. And so we see here, finally, Pharaoh wants them gone. I mean, he had resisted this and was hard-hearted through most of the story. But at this point, get out. Take all of you, get out. Take your families, take your herds, every bit of it. I also want to note that Pharaoh called for Moses. There's no record of Moses going to see the Pharaoh. In all probability, the way that this played out was the Pharaoh sent a messenger to Moses and Aaron. Because when Moses and Aaron had last talked to Pharaoh, he said, you will not see my face again. You won't see my face again. So in all probability, he sent a messenger by chariot or by horse out from his palace to the place where Moses was living. Now, you have to think about that for a second. That's going to take time. They didn't have iPhones back then. So Pharaoh did not text Moses, get out. Didn't have that. He didn't have a telephone. He had nothing other than communication of that time, which was either get on a chariot and go out there or a horse. Now, consider if it's a 10-mile trip out there from Pharaoh's palace, how long is that going to take? You know, a horse going 5 miles an hour, it's a pretty good clip. Remember, it's dark. He's going, you know, there's no street lights, none of that. So he's going to ride out there and give the message to Moses. So 5 miles an hour seems pretty slow to us, but on a horse, may have been a good pace. So he went out there and told Moses, Pharaoh says, get out. Okay, now we've gotten the message, we can get out. So if it was 10 miles, horse traveling 5 miles an hour, that's going to take 2 hours. So you have midnight, you have the death of the firstborn, which is going to take time, and you're going to have time for when they finally figure out what's happened for them to get out and relay the message to Moses. So the nights pass ebbing away as these things are taking place. So did Israel go out of Egypt on that night? Well, the firstborn were dead. Pharaoh's relayed the message to Moses. So could they have left that night? So the night's ebbing away. All right? So note again in Exodus chapter 12, verse 22, It says, "And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts, and you do all of this." And but we're told here, none of you are to go out until morning. When morning comes, the sun is beginning to rise. So could they go out of the house before morning? God said, don't go out, because if you do, you will die. So Israel couldn't leave before morning. And there were other things that had to be accomplished before they did leave. So to get Israel through all that God laid out during the night portion of the 14th requires that a lot take place during the night. And so what did they do on the daylight portion of the 14th? In Exodus chapter 12, verse 10. It says, "You shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire." So you had roasted the lamb, and if there were remains, you're told to dispose of it in the morning. Well, you couldn't do it till morning, could you? That was God's instruction. So you may have had some remains, but you had to wait until morning to take care of it, take care of that cleanup work. And during the daylight portion of the Passover, they were to spoil the Egyptians. That's going to take some time. Exodus chapter 13, verse 19. They had another task that they had to accomplish. It says in Exodus 13, verse 19, it says, "And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, 'God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you.'" So I'm not sure where the bones of Joseph would have been, but he was probably buried in the way that was common to the Egyptians, since that was where he was living. But you would have to go get that sarcophagus in which he was laid. You'd have to get it, and you'd have to bring it to where they're going to depart from. So I'm not sure where it was. I'm sure they knew where it was, and they had to go get those bones to carry them out and take them back to the land of Canaan. Chapter 12, verse 40. Chapter 12, verse 40. There it says, "Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And it is a solemn night, a solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt." And this is pointing to the night to be observed, which we continue to observe, which reminds us of Israel coming out of Egypt. "This is the night that the Lord, night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations." So we may not physically come out of this world, but we are to come out spiritually speaking. And it's a reminder of that. Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33, verses 1 through 4. It says, "Now these are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are their journeys according to their starting points. They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the month, on the day after Passover." Note, it's the day after Passover, not on Passover or at the end of Passover. It's the day after that they're starting. "The children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians." For what were the Egyptians doing? They were burying their dead. They were mourning and they were burying their dead as God had executed his judgment on the gods of Egypt. So again, if you want to make a biblical case that everything occurred in one night, it's a problem. And you have to do all these convolutions to get that to work out. So that undermines the case that it took place on Passover night. All of it took place on that Passover night at the end of the 14th. And it's a big logistical problem trying to get all of this done. So it's estimated that there were between 2 and 3 million people and a mixed multitude and their cattle who came out of Egypt. And let's think about logistics here for a second. So they all had to gather at a particular place from which they would depart. So you're looking at between 2 and 3 million people, all right? So, okay, that could be easily done. Maybe not, because think about it. 2 to 3 million people is the population of Chicago, all right? So you're going to evacuate 2 to 3 million people from Chicago in the dark, get them all to gather together and move out of the land. That may be difficult, especially in Chicago, but it was difficult even in ancient Egypt because it's dark. You're trying to gather all these people. I mean, if you're looking with a scenario where they do all of this in the dark, how could you do that? So you're going to look at all these people gathering in the dark, which seems like a problem. However, if you look at the daylight portion of this, of the 14th of the month, when they did these things, then they gather and they actually leave Egypt at the as it's sunset and the 15th day is beginning, which fits beautifully with what God's working out with bringing Israel out. And if you think about this line of people, this group of people that's going to come out, let's say that this group of people was a half mile wide. If it was a half mile wide, then it would probably be about 10 miles back to the back of the group. Okay, so you have a half mile wide, 10 miles deep. And they're going to start walking out of the land of Egypt. So you got all these people, their children, their cattle, and they're moving out of Egypt. So if you had a fixed point and you started this, how long would it take for the last person to pass that fixed point? Thinking about how fast people can walk, it would take a while. It would take 2 to 4 hours for everyone to leave, you know, start on the journey. So again, you're looking at a lot of time needed to move out of the land. And once they got to, they camped at a place called Succoth, according to the army quartermaster. If you had the number of people, 2 to 3 million people, how much area would you need? I mean, again, think of it, half mile wide, 10 miles deep. How big of an area would you need in order to camp? You would need an area of about 750 square miles. Okay, that's a big area. So you've got all these logistical things that you're going to have to surmount, and it would take a while for them to actually move out. I mean, the guys at the head of the caravan, they're all way far ahead of you, and you're 10 miles behind them. So as they're all moving out, and they're supposed to get all of this done before dawn, between midnight and dawn. Hard to believe they could do that. So they moved out, and they moved out exactly at the time when God told them, 430 years from dating back to the time of Abraham. And it worked perfectly as God brought them out. He promised them that, and it went exactly as God said. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1. Here it says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. And he did bring them out at night. But he brought them out on the night of the first day of unleavened bread, not on the night of Passover at the beginning. So this is a, you know, as you look at Deuteronomy 16:1, it's a critical scripture because it specifically states that they marched out of Egypt by night. And as we've looked at the logistics and all of the things God wanted them to do, it would take them some time to do that. So it seems clear that they walked out at the beginning of the 15th day of the month during the night. So that helps us, and it fits beautifully, as I said, with the meaning of the day. So the Passover is about God passing over us as a result of the blood of the Lamb, that we all deserve to die just like the firstborn of Egypt. But God overlooked the sins of Israel and did not kill them along with the firstborn of Egypt. He spared them because of the blood of the Lamb. And it's an important lesson for all of us that still applies. On the last day of unleavened bread, what did they do? Again, it correlates beautifully with God's plan. They came out of Egypt. They passed through the, they basically were baptized by passing through the Red Sea and began their journey up to the land of Israel. Let's look, go to Exodus chapter 12, verse 15. Exodus chapter 12, verse 15. So what God is laying out in the Old Testament is a beautiful picture of God sanctifying and redeeming his people when we understand it correctly. And it's something we can look to and learn from. Exodus 12, verse 15, it says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses, for whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation. And it talks about these, we're not to do any work that's not necessary. And it says in verse 17, so you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For on the same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. So we continue to observe this and to think about its significance for us. Finally, let's go back to our final scripture, to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23, and look at verses 5 and 6. Leviticus 23, verses 5 and 6. It says here, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. So we celebrate the Passover at twilight when the sun has gone down and darkness is coming upon us. That's when we observe the Passover. And it says in verse 6, and on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. So if you look at the sequence of events, you look at all the evidence and bring it to bear on the question, it's impossible for the Israelites to have both stayed in their homes until morning and marched out of Egypt at night. It's either one or the other, and only one makes good sense. So it seems clear if you go through the matter sequentially, but you can see that there's only one way that this could have worked out, and that's with Israel leaving at the beginning of the 15th on that first day of unleavened bread. So that ends the first split sermon. So we'll go ahead and have another song and special music, and then we will have the second split sermon.